AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. What a week. President Biden had a press conference, and USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack did a review of his first year of 2.0 and spent 4 hours talking with members of the House Ag Committee. Okay, Biden complained about a two-hour press conference. How would you like to do 4 hours in a room full of elected officials?
Live from a day when historically not great things happen, I'm just saying, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's the Friday free-for-all with panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Michelle Jones. Right after the news with Clinton Griffiths, we'll hear from Jennifer Scheich of Farm Journal's Pork. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now, the host of AgriTalk, grab that rabbit's foot, Chip Flory.
Okay, I don't understand. Okay, it's January 21st. Yes. Things don't normally go well today?
That's my findings. You know, like yesterday, okay. If I don't know what I'm going to say in the intro, I'll look it up. Historically, what's happened today? So like yesterday, it was the 41st anniversary of the hostages being released from Iran. That's a good thing.
Okay.
So I mentioned that. I look up today, and I'm telling you, through the years and the decades, it's like this person died, that person died, crashes, all kinds of things happening. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to.
Wow.
Celebrating the anniversary of the plague or something like that.
Way to keep it light on a Friday, Joe.
Yeah, thank you, Jeez. Joe. Appreciate that.
Keeping it light, keeping it real.
Welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. I am your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could be here on this chilly, chilly, chilly morning, January. Yeah, in Iowa. Wow. Clinton?
Yes,
Clinton
sir.
Griffiths, are you there?
I am. Yeah, I started with a 7 on the car today.
Okay.
7 degrees.
Was there a plus or a negative in front of that?
Well, it would be a plus. It was
it would
a negative.
Be a plus?
It was a negative, okay. So I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah, we started off with a negative 14.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's cold outside.
It is. You want to, when you go out to fill the bird feeders and everything, you definitely put a jacket on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something light.
Might put a hoodie on. You know, you want to definitely, with your shorts and your Crocs, you definitely want to throw a hoodie on. It's going to be a little brisk out.
That's exactly right. Man, what a week. You had a conversation with Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I did.
We got a rare sighting of President Biden at a press conference. It doesn't happen very often.
Right.
And the 4 hours that Secretary Vilsack spent with the House Ag Committee, obviously, that's going to provide us with plenty of content for today's free-for-all. Looking forward to getting into it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Well, let's kick off with some news here, Chip.
Perfect.
We'll get rolling. We'll start with export demand in the news today. USDA this morning announcing a sale of 132,000 metric tons of soybeans for delivery to China and the sale of nearly 248,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to unknown destinations. In its weekly export sales report, it's reporting nearly 1.1 million metric tons of corn this week, Chip.
Yeah, the sale to China on soybean, the sale on corn to unknown, there's no guarantee that the unknown is also China in there. But if it is, that is telling me that China is growing more and more uncomfortable with the potential supply availability out of South America.
I talked to Dan Bossi just before we came on. He says the current price of corn in China is $11.
Yeah. Yeah. I had Kent Beadle on the show yesterday afternoon from Ag Shuri, and his quote was 1080. So it may have rallied 20 cents overnight. Yeah.
That's crazy. Speaking of rallying, U.S. stock futures indicating further loss at Friday's open, while markets in Europe and Asia Pacific tumbling overnight. Earnings, Netflix, Peloton, the prospect of tighter Federal Reserve monetary policy, tensions between the U.S. and Russia all weighing on sentiment across the globe. The Dow has now seen its 5th consecutive down session. This is as of yesterday, the longest such streak since September, with blue chip indexes having fallen in 9 of the past 11 sessions. And Chip, following up with my conversation with Dan, he did say he's seeing money flowing from stocks into commodities now. That was something that's on his radar.
Right, right. And we are watching that happen as well. From time to time, we get kind of a surge in activity on the sell side in the equities markets, and it translates almost immediately into a surge in buying interest in the commodities. Happened yesterday morning, 9:59 a.m. Central Time, with a big push of money into the soybean market. Really incredible stuff. Dow's up 100 points right now, just a little bit of a recovery, but I wouldn't bet that that's where we're going to end up today.
That's right. I found this interesting. Intel investing $20 billion to make semiconductor chips in Ohio. The new factories will be built near Columbus, part of an attempt to reduce the U.S. reliance on chip manufacturers in Taiwan. You did mention USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. He did appear before the House Ag Committee for nearly 4 hours on Thursday, addressing the state of U.S. ag and many of the key topics that will impact farmers and ranchers, not only in this year, but in the years ahead. Now, one of the issues he talked about was the status of disbursements under the spot market hog pandemic program announced back in December. Vilsack's blaming delays on issues relative to eligibility requirements and said USDA is working to revise that application process.
Yeah. Dude, every time I go out and I'm with a group of producers, there's going to be a hog producer that'll come up and say, have you heard anything on those payments that we were supposed to get?
It
happens all the time. And no, I haven't.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Real quick, latest survey of rural bankers by Creighton University showing the index remains above growth neutral. That's the 14th straight month. The region's overall reading in January, it fell a bit, but overwhelmingly bankers are saying higher farm input prices, like fertilizer, is one of the top farm threats to finances in the year ahead.
It absolutely is. And if growers are spending more on inputs, they're not going to be spending as much on Main Street in small town USA. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Clinton, hey, thanks for the help this week. Have fun next week with the show too, buddy.
All right, sounds good. We'll do it.
All right, that is Clinton Griffiths, Ag Day anchor and the editor of Farm Journal. Jennifer Shake, Farm Journal's pork editor. How are you, Jennifer?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing real fine. So we've been watching the development of these branded products in the meat business, and now the Duroc brand is coming on. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, for quite a few years, the National Swine Registry, which is the organization that maintains pedigree for Duroc, Hampshire, Landrace, and Yorkshire breeds of swine, has been striving to find ways to enhance the value of all of their breeds, but particularly the meat quality of purebred Durocs. And so as the technology has developed and consumer interest has really grown in understanding where their product comes from and people starting to see that, wow, there is a difference in pork quality. They're really going to start capitalizing on this by creating their first branded meat program. And so they're just announcing that and getting that program going because there's quite a few advantages of Duroc pork, according to some of their science and data.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have some of those advantages in front of you that they're listing?
Of the things they're talking about is just that higher level of intramuscular fat and marbling and better pH and water holding capacity. And so we're seeing more, you know, Duroc influence in some of the, you know, commercial lines as well. But, you know, this might be a way to help those who are excited and interested in Duroc swine to be able to have other markets for their genetics.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that Duroc breed has been a base of many crossbreed programs over the years. There's no question about that. A lot of blue-butted pigs went to market over the years, Jennifer. All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you.
All right. Jennifer Shayek, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Free for all next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
No way, and I would do it.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Anything for love, I would do anything.
do that. Wow. Meatloaf. No, that was a comeback. That was a comeback song right there from the 90s. The Bat Out of Hell album. I think it is the third best selling album ever. Ever.
Really?
Yes. More than, it's like 35 million copies. And guys, I was probably responsible for at least six of those, because going from 8-track to cassettes, and then I wore out a cassette, get another cassette, wore out a cassette, get another cassette, CDs, I had them all. I had them all. So you're welcome, Mr. Loaf, for the contributions that I made to Bat Out of Hell. Welcome to AgriTalk. Meatloaf died today, or I guess yesterday. Yesterday it was, at the age of 74. Iconic rocker, Jim Wiesmeyer. Give me a memory.
Oh, God, he had, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. His real name was Michael Lee Ede. He got his name from his father. When he was born, he looked red. So his father called him Meat, and I think his coach later on added the Loaf. That's the story.
A football
behind
coach
meatloaf.
Later added the Loaf.
He was a good singer and a good actor. Good actor.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And when he was interviewed, he liked to be referred to as Meat. Well, Meat. It's just kind of a strange thing, but such a talent, such a talent. Michelle Jones out in Montana. Have you got, that's, Meatloaf is after your time, or before your time, isn't he?
Meatloaf is before my time, but I mean, my parents listen to him, and so I certainly know who he is, and actually I like a lot of his music.
Oh, good. Welcome to the free-for-all, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Thanks
glad
for
that
having
you're
me.
Here. Yep, glad that you are here. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio.
Hey, Meatloaf? Hey, Chip, great to be here. You know, my dad, I can remember as a kid, my dad playing a cassette of Dashboard Lights.
Yeah, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
And just having it, like, blaring, like, just so loud. I was like, yeah, my dad's pretty cool. This is good. He likes this music. This is good. So I just looked online. You're right. Top four album of all time, Bat Out of Hell.
Top four.
Only beaten by, number one's Michael Jackson Thriller, AC/DC Back in Black, and Whitney Houston's Bodyguard soundtrack. So
soundtrack,
pretty,
really.
Pretty esteemed company there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's incredible. And Paradise by the Dashboard Light. One of my favorite memories of that song is we had a bus full of people. Good friends, people my age. We were going to a Kid Rock concert, okay? Well, there were a couple of younger people. My son and his wife were on the bus with us. And we were playing music, of course, and the bus driver put on Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. And every single one of us knew every single word except for my son and daughter-in-law, who sat there in complete amazement at these old people singing along with Meatloaf. It was fun. It was fun. Thanks for that, Meatloaf. That one has an impact on me. I'm going to miss him, and he was pretty special, I think. All right. Let's get to it, Jim. We had a presidential press conference this week. It was only the second official Biden press conference, and I think he inadvertently made news, but it did make news, didn't it?
Well, on Ukraine, they had to backtrack on a couple of things, Chip, that he said. But the key one was he really followed up on his initial take on Ukraine by saying it could be a small incursion, signaling that there wouldn't be much reaction to that. Boy, he pulled right. that one back quick.
Yeah, but I had a conversation with Randy Russell, the Russell Group, on the show yesterday about it. You can't walk that back, Jim, can you? I mean, because it was heard by every leader that is looking for weakness in the White House. out there. I mean, Xi Jinping heard it. The Iranians heard it. North Korean heard it. Everybody that's looking for weakness in the White House heard that, Jim.
Yeah, there's no editing involved there, is what you just said. You're right. He did show that he could go almost 2 hours. That was the plus side. He had some moments there, but I thought it was disconcerting. I thought the Wall Street Journal had the best line when they said, "What's worse than a president who claims elections are a sham?" And then they said, "Two presidents." So right. Now we've got Trump and Biden basically saying the same thing, setting these up. That's not good for any country.
It's unbelievable. The Michelle talking about the voter rights legislation that President Biden hopes to push through yet, basically saying that if they don't get it, you can't trust this fall's elections to be free and fair. What's your take?
Yeah, I think that we have significantly lost the messaging on that one. I don't think that is at all an accurate statement. I don't, you know, President Trump's statements on this election being stolen are not at all accurate. And Biden's comments that we can't trust the fall election, they're also not at all accurate and really super dangerous for democracy, to be entirely. I mean, just to echo what Jim said, I mean, that is not something we can have, that type of distrust in our election processes in this country.
Right. Yeah, well put. Well put.
Chip, can we go back to Rush for a quick second?
Absolutely.
There's, you know, I think the U.S. presidents have sort of figured out how to deal with China from this perspective of the tone and the narrative. But boy, Russia is a bit of a struggle with Putin. You know, if you go back to, we can go back further, but if you know, you go to Obama and Trump, and now Biden, Russia really, I think, has U.S. presidents in the White House really perplexed on what is the best way to handle the situation, because it just, and you look we're concerned. Think about what's going on in Germany, and you look at how their energy supplies from Russia and the situation that they're in the middle of winter. We talk so much about China, but what Putin is actually up to is we can speculate, but it's very, very concerning.
Oh yes, yeah, it absolutely is. And his Jim, what he really wants is to push NATO back, right? And take it back decades on where NATO can have any say on what's happening.
Yeah, well, he put up requirements that the U.S. and our Western allies cannot agree to, which is leading so many people to think, well, that's what he wants. He really wants to invade. But I think what we're seeing today is a last-ditch effort to avoid an invasion with the talks with Antony, our Secretary of State,
Blinken.
You know, Blinken, and our other allies. So diplomacy can still work if given a chance. But boy, you've got even Biden at the press conference saying that, I didn't think I'd ever see a president say that, at least publicly, that he thought Putin would go in.
Yeah, yeah. And he said it in such a matter-of-fact, almost accepting way that it was jaw-dropping, Jim.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Continue the conversation then on the voter reform laws, Jim. We're not going to see voting laws federalized, are we? It's going to stay with the states, right?
It will stay with the states because it would probably be ruled unconstitutional anyway, but it would take a while. But there is an effort, Chip, to get into the Electoral College. You've got Susan Collins, Republican, centrist Republican from Maine, working with a number of other Republicans and Democrats. And I think you will see that. But again, I want to be fair.
What do you mean we'll see that?
A change that to avoid what we went through when Trump lost. They're going to try to update it so you don't have this murkiness in how the electoral vote is certified. And I think we will see that. Now, to be fair, Biden keeps coming out and saying, we know people can vote, but who counts the votes? He's on this, who's counting the votes? So I wanted to be fair in that regard, that with so many people voting the last presidential election, it's not that people can't vote, it's the process, Chip, and that's usually right. Where it falls apart.
Right, right. And as Big Apple Joe Stackler just mentioned to me in a message, voters have got to have faith in the elections or they just won't even bother to participate. And that's another threat that we're talking about by casting doubt over the free and fairness of the elections. Let's talk about Vilsack next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Okay, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady is with us again to talk about what's going on in these markets. Brian, I'm going to go to hogs because the ability of that market to build on yesterday's strong gains so far today, very impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. New contract highs from the spring months on out yesterday, big move up in February as well. We just aren't at the contract highs. But, the follow-through buying this morning, we're seeing slight to moderate gains. While on the surface, that wouldn't be impressive, when you add it to what the recent moves have been, it's very impressive.
Yeah, it certainly is. Getting that February contract back on top of $85 is very important. What's going on in the cattle complex then?
Just a little bit of a pullback in here, a little bit more than a little bit, I guess, at the moment. Moderate to sharp losses with feeders leading us down. But, probably not too much of a concern at this point in time. Need to get the cash market to strengthen a little bit. And it looked like about steady prices this week so far.
Okay, into the grain trade. Pullback in beans today after a big day yesterday.
Yeah, and not just yesterday, this week. I mean, the past 2 days, and so probably not too much of a surprise ahead of the weekend. We'll see when the noon weather updates come out, what will happen, and whether traders want to continue to take profits into the weekend or whether they want to maybe back off a little bit and add some length again.
Okay. Little bit of strength in corn. What's going on in wheat?
Not much in wheat, to be honest with you, just some spreading activity there. On the corn side of things, had good weekly export sales, which is supportive, and had a daily corn sale in there as well. So,
yep, very good. Thanks, Brian. We've got the Cattle on Feed report this afternoon, 2 o'clock Central Time. That's Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Actually, why don't you just send us a tweet? Use hashtag AgriTalk in the message, and that way I'll be sure to see it as the conversation continues on the free-for-all with Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Michelle Jones. You know, I was going to ask you, Sean, okay, I was complaining about, I think it was 14 below here this morning. What do you got?
We're warmer.
What?
We're warmer than that. Why do you live in this place so cold, Chip? That's crazy.
God's country here.
Yeah, we are 46. So live in the
Celsius. You're 46 Celsius.
We are 46 Fahrenheit, 8 Celsius.
What? You're 46 degrees?
Yes. Yeah, but you know those Chinooks roll in. It's it can be nice, but I'll tell you what, like 4 days ago it was like, I don't know, minus 30 Fahrenheit. So it's quite the swing.
Crazy, crazy. Michelle, what about you?
Well, it looks like it's about 34 in Montana right now. It's actually been pretty nice the last couple of weeks. It's roughly 50 here in Seattle. So
in Seattle.
And it's not raining. So it's a nice day.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah, no, I'm still overnight. Like I said, we've warmed up about 10 degrees from the morning lows, and we're actually going to get into the mid-teens today. So that's going to feel pretty good.
Well, and Chip, here and we're, you know, in Montana where Michelle is, we're going to need some spring rain desperately. It is, you know, it's brutal.
Yeah.
That's an understatement.
And it's, Michelle, it's just been going on for so long now, hasn't it?
Yeah. And we're in an area that it's not nearly as long. You get out in eastern Montana, they've been dry since 2020, mid 2020. I mean, most of the state's still in D3. You can probably argue a lot of it's in D4. It's just not because of the seasonality. But yeah, we haven't gotten nearly enough snow cover to make a dent in the drought. We're going to need a very, very good spring to be in decent shape. We've gotten enough moisture. I will say for annual crops like wheat, we have gotten enough moisture, at least on our winter wheat right now, that it actually looks really good. We may be able to limp along like annual crops, but for the cattle producers, livestock, the conditions of the hay crops, as well as just range, is in very, very tough shape.
Wow.
Rica, where it was 85 to 90 degrees, and but it was at a crop insurance conference, and a number of producers were there, and Brian Grady asked me, if they are not selling corn and beans right now, why aren't they? And a number of them told me they think that the drought is going to creep into the Midwest, and that's why they're holding more than a few stocks.
Wow. And that's, you know, if they've put the bushels that are in the bin right now, I don't know what's – Brian asked the question the right way. Why not? Why aren't you selling them? If you've still got bushels in the bin from 21 crop, I don't know what's going to pry them out of the bin right now. It's going to take – it's not going to be $6 old crop prices, is old crop futures. It's either going to be something well above that or below that to get those bushels out of the bin, but it ain't going to be $6.
You're right. And as Brian pointed out, over 60% of the corn stocks are on farm.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we're fresh out of wheat. My dad sold his last 4,000 bushels a couple of days ago for 10.01, which is the most he's sold winter wheat for in his career. He was pretty excited.
10.01. My gosh. Yeah.
He was hanging on to it. They're short on high quality wheat up here, so the basis is really high, $2 upside. And so, yeah, he was hanging on until he got 10, and he sold it as soon as he did.
Good for him. Good for him. Wow.
Well, hey, Chip,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, speaking of being fresh out of wheat, we're fresh out of feed wheat and feed barley up here. We are trying to import into Canada unprecedented amounts of corn out of the U.S. It's insane. You know, in 2021, I think the last number I saw, 2.2 million tons coming north. You know, CP Rail hauling like 8,100 car loads in 2021. I had one feed yard tell me this week that they're short alone on their feed yard 200 rail cars. Big challenges. It's an unprecedented trade flow. Like we bring corn up north typically any given year, but with the drought the demand is just nuts.
Unbelievable. Wow. What's that going to do to decisions for this spring, Haney, especially when we talk about increasing crush capacity up your way, right?
Yeah, we had another announcement this week, a plant going to go into Regina. It's the third major plant that's going to go into the Regina area. FCL building is going to start building a 1.1 million metric ton facility. This will, if all of these plants get built, Chip, and they're all being built for renewable diesel as the main target, of course, but it's going to bring our domestic crush capacity up to about 17 million metric tons. Well, on a typical year, our crop is like 20, 21, 22. That's getting really tight. I don't know how much more room there is for expansion. You know, I think this year we had, what, a 13? We would actually be below our domestic crush number. This is big-time diversification away from relying on exports of canola seed into the Chinese market for sure.
Yeah.
But it's got a rain, Chip. You need rain
right.
to grow canola. So
yes.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And like Michelle said, you need it for barley too, but that's going to be competition for acres with spring wheat up there. Canola acres are going to be expanding unless spring wheat decides to do something about it.
Yeah, but we're really getting to the close top on how far canola can expand past, 22, 23 million acres. It's, I think the bigger expansion could happen actually in the U.S. That's where I would watch more of a percentage expansion for sure.
I agree.
The agronomics are really limiting us from that perspective. We've got blackleg, club root, diseases like that are really putting a cap on it.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. I want to go back to the Biden press conference for just a moment with Jim here, because there was one question that I wanted to ask him based off of something that Biden said. And Jim, what he said was he thinks that he has outperformed expectations in his first year. Do you agree, Jim?
No, not in any judgment. He may have convinced his wife, but that would be it.
Yeah, that's right. That comment got Randy and I into a bit of a conversation about, his ability to hold the office, and that's going to be, like it or not, and I don't like it, because I want my president, I don't care what party he's from, but I want my president to be strong and to be well-respected around the globe. But the conversation about his ability to hold the office, it's going to be had in 2022, isn't it, Jim?
It should be, and I think it will be. He can hold his own for a while, but then he has these maverick moments, and that's what's so, disconcerting. But he had some good points throughout that almost two-hour event.
Yeah.
And I think they wanted it to go that long just to show that he could be up there that long. But where our president gets in trouble is when he goes too long in answering a topic and goes off of the script. That's where he gets in trouble.
And that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Who does that sound like?
Right. But you can tell from his performance and his comments during the press conference that this has been a topic of conversation behind closed doors. Because as he starts getting into the weeds on a topic, more than once he said, "Oh, I shouldn't go that. I shouldn't talk about this anymore. We need to move on." He says that out loud.
Yes.
Because they had promised. Don't get in the weeds.
Yeah, I remember though that first week, Jen Psaki, press secretary, they had promised that there would be lots of access, they would get back to press conferences. Well, President Biden's had less press conferences than both Obama and Trump. So there's been some protecting going on for sure.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I almost want the way the British system does it, because frankly, I don't think our Washington reporters ask the right questions anymore. I mean, there was no question it's on the border. There was no questions on the crime rise in the cities. So I would love to see, I don't care whether it's Republican or Democrat, go before a congressional panel of picked leaders from both parties and just have at it.
Yeah.
Well, I heard a political analyst earlier this week that say sure thing that he is running again in 24, which it sort of boggles my mind a little bit based on, I don't mean to commit ageism here, but like, why? Like he's getting up there. I'd be thinking about retirement if I had been in the Senate that long and around Washington, but it sounds like he may take another kick at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Michelle, what do you think? Should he?
Run in 2024?
I
don't know. I was surprised that did he not say that Harris was his 20 would be his 2024 running mate. I've been kind of surprised at that as well, because I'm kind of with Sean. I kind of feel like if I was that age I would retire, and it is getting very, to put another 4 years on that, as well as just general performance. His general performance has not been great.
Right.
And that, you know, you guys know me, I'm center left, but that is not great. So I'm surprised.
Okay. All right. When we come back, I promise this time we'll talk about Vilsack's testimony to the House Ag Committee.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
And welcome back. Let's wrap up this week's Free for All. We've got Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture's Sean Haney, and Montana Farmer Michelle Jones on the Free for All with us today. Jim, the testimony of USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack to the House Ag Committee. When G.T. Thompson made his opening statement, I guess, it started off a little bit of thin ice there, didn't it?
It did. It was very contentious because he said it's about time we've had this conversation about production agriculture issues and things like that. But then it worked into a very revealing forte, with the Vilsack. And Vilsack's always good. I mean, he indicated that the initial WIP plus payouts for 2021 will come in April or May. So that's the first tranche. He did say the hog producers, that spot market hog pandemic program, will hopefully be announced in around the March timeframe. He took on China, said seven key areas still need their falling short. He listed those. And he was really defending EPA's RFS, Chip. But he's a biofuel promoter. And he made that clear during his remarks. I agree. I mean, he has a number of years, backing biofuels, and he took on the concern of electric vehicles, and he said the cars with internal combustion engines will remain on the road for the foreseeable future. Those were the highlights. And he kind of signaled that they're going to tap CCC for climate programs to the tune of about $1 billion.
Right. Right, including some incentives for those cover crops. Wasn't that part of the Build Back Better plan, that original idea that $25 per acre for growers to plant cover crops? And it sounds like they're just going to say, well, it's a good enough idea, we're going to find a way to make it happen anyway.
That's coming. Cover crop is coming, and he said it'll be announced soon. So whether we're going to test, pilot programs and things like that. And that's all well and good, because for the new farm bill that comes out, where they can use pilot, programs to assess whether it's working or not.
Gotcha. Michelle, did you see anything in the reports from the testimony that caught your attention?
Yeah, I mean, obviously for us in Montana, a lot of the focus is on the drought, so some of the disaster payments, a lot of focus on the WIP Plus. I was interested that they're tying WIP Plus payments for livestock into the LFP program. In all transparency, like, we're still waiting for our LFP payments. The applications have been in since early fall, and the FSA unfortunately still hasn't had the time to process them. So really looking for the FSA to free up some of that disaster aid and get it out to the countryside where it is badly needed, especially up in the Northern Plains and Montana. But I think based on the tight bandwidth within the local FSAs, as well as on the USDA at the national level, April to May, unfortunately, looks like a pretty optimistic timeline to me. But the sooner they can possibly get it out, the better.
Gotcha.
Chip, what stuck out to me was his comments around needing to fight against the extraction economy. Where the U.S. quits just exporting raw commodities because it's easy, it's convenient, and building more of a domestic value-added processing industry within the country at a local level. Obviously, we've talked a lot about kill capacity when it comes to packing plants, but it's also that also comes down to things like pea plants in the Dakotas, or, you know, milling facilities for things like wheat in part of the wheat belt. That's the kind of stuff that he's talking about. Moving further up the value chain, you can still export those things, but you're bringing more jobs into rural areas.
Jim, Secretary Vilsack has, as you said, he's always been a biofuel supporter, but he's always been a value up, value added supporter as well. That's consistent to Vilsack 1.0, and here we are, we're hearing it again in 2.0.
Yeah, and I think that's the value of him being a farmer governor, because he's seen real life examples where you can convert, as he said earlier this week, ag waste products into a lot of things beyond renewable energy. It can include chemicals, materials, fabrics, fibers, etc. So that's the Vilsack as a thinker that I always like to hear.
Yep. I do not always agree with Secretary Vilsack, but I've got to give him credit on this. That was 4 hours of testimony, and he could have gone 4 days and talked ag issues without notes, Jim, without notes.
That's why I think you'll see him at a very high-level capacity under Biden before his first term ends.
Really?
Yes, I do. Yes.
So when you say very high level capacity, I mean, you're talking something like Secretary of State or something.
Or Chief of Staff.
Chief of Staff, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Ron Klain to me is not doing a good job. He's leading Biden astray. And, you know, Vilsack would play that a very good role as a gatekeeper because he knows so many issues. I mean, when you have to do agriculture, we know you have to know interest rates, you have to know currencies, you have to know trade policy, energy policy, etc. So he's the right person.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll be watching for that one. Definitely. Michelle, what's at the top of your priority list as we wrap things up here?
You know, just getting ready into next year. I mean, we're basically eight weeks away from planting season, so tax season's here, obviously, and getting the new operating lines extended and just jumping into the year and hope, crossing our fingers that it starts snowing in February and March. That's about it.
Gotcha. Jim, you on the road again next week?
Yes. Vegas early next week, Western Alfalfa Seed Growers Association, and then in Phoenix, the AgView Executive Business Conference. I'm looking forward to warm weather again.
Yeah, and I can't believe that I'm going to sign off by saying this. Hey, Haney, send me some of that warmer weather, will you?
I will, for sure. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Have a great week. All right. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Thanks to Michelle Jones, Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney. Great crew for the free-for-all today. Come back this afternoon. Going to have a conversation with Chip Nellinger, Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.